And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Our time together is all.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
The hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation. With Sean Engel. And Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast in which me and several of my less than reputable friends will be going through the entire series of Deep Space Nine, episode by episode, providing reviews and maybe, if we're really lucky, some insight. I am joined today by my usual cohorts, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello. It would be inadvertent insight.
Of course. That's a given. And Mr. Sean Engel.
Hey, everyone. Yeah, if we're giving insight here in this show, then, you know, it's a mistake somewhere.
Well, and then when we're all done with this episode, we're going to just fall into a con review. And to do that, we have special guest, Dr. Bill Robinson.
I think I'm a changeling. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know.
Please don't break into singing Tiffany, please.
Ah, you see where I was going with that.
We already did.
It scares me that you would recognize that as a Tiffany reference.
Well, I'm trying to, didn't someone else?
Who's got no testicles now,
big boy?
Really?
Hey,
Sean.
It's 80s. It's 80s music. I'll just shut up.
Yes.
you don't want to dig the hole any deeper?
Were you a big fan of Tiffany back in the day, Sean?
Yeah.
You were the guy who liked Debbie Gibson as well, weren't you?
Well, I like Debbie Gibson more. She had talent.
Well, then you must have loved that.
Some strange definition of the word talent I wasn't previously aware of.
Compared to Tiffany, she had talent.
Then you must have loved that Sci-Fi Channel movie where Tiffany and Debbie Gibson got into a cat fight.
No,
but I like that episode issue of Playboy with Tiffany and Debbie Gibson in it.
Ooh.
I don't know if that was real before anyone writes in. I made that up.
I was
up.
Just going to say, as everybody starts searching the internet.
A thousand people cried out at once.
Yeah, a thousand kids of the 80s start hitting their keyboards.
What happened to the internet? Who did a search for Debbie Gibson and Tiffany and broke the internet? What the heck?
Move along
home.
Halloween!
Do not bring that. You know, as much as you hated us bringing up, you know, QLS and, you know, Vash last episode, do not bring up Move Along.
Well, I'm just looking.
Really, really bad episodes of this show in the future, we should just say Alan Moraine and end the show.
Exactly.
Well, that's right now. That's the bottom. You know how we have it's no Jaws to say it's not as good as that. we could have it's no Move Along Home to say it's not as bad as that. I'm just looking at the spreadsheet of the ratings that we've given on the episodes this season, and I gave each of those episodes, Q-less and Move Along Home, a 1. And those are the only two ratings between the three of us that have dropped that low. You guys gave The Passenger a 1. Or no, not you guys. Me and Andy gave The Passenger a 1.5. But that's...
Yeah, I was the holdout on that. I was the one that was
actually, Sean, you were a 1 also on Move Along Home.
Oh, yeah, on Move Along Home, yeah. I think we were all pretty much in agreement that it was crap.
Yeah, Andy... somehow I got nominated to defend it.
But Andy, who like, went on a rant last episode about the half stars, gave it 1.5.
I love that you're going to bring that up every show now.
Every time you give a half star, I'm going to be just crucifying you for it.
Well, I didn't know, according to the rules of acquisition, that cutting a bar of latinum in half devalues it by half. Who knew?
What? Never mind. Math is not my forte.
Not this time of year, no.
That is a very complex concept, that if you cut something in half, it devalues it by half.
You can see
we might have
to
get Professor Allen on here to explain that.
Look, man,
yeah, get the economics guy on to explain latinum to me.
I forgot to tell you guys, I'm trying to stop drinking Mountain Dew. I'm trying to stop drinking caffeine, so I'm also
wow, non sequitur. Although that was an episode of Voyager, so I think Bill's on the wrong show.
Oops.
Alright, well, before we get into our episode, which this week is the episode Vortex, before we get into that, does anybody have any Star Trek discussion?
No.
Nobody released a trailer for anything this week.
Yeah, we already discussed the last episode, we discussed the trailer that has Star in it. You know, maybe by the time this gets released, a different trailer will be out, but we can't really discuss it since we're recording this well in advance. So, sorry, folks.
Well, there is going to be another trailer where Luke, Han, and Leia are all trying to lift Thor's hammer at the beginning.
I would pay money to see that.
They're trying to lift Vader's lightsaber.
Oh, they're all eating shawarma.
Jawa shawarma.
Yeah. They've had a really rough night out on Tatooine. The bars are finally kicking out at 4 o'clock in the morning. Leia says, let's go for some Jawa shawarma.
Oh,
and
wait.
Luke are like, really?
You know what? It'll be Bantha shawarma. Because everything has to be referenced to Bantha.
Yeah.
No, poodoo.
Bantha poodoo shawarma. I have a poodoo shake and a Bantha shawarma. Thanks. To go?
Moving on.
moving on along, we'll go on to our synopsis, I guess.
Odo's mysterious life hides a haunting secret.
You've heard of other shapeshifters.
What would telling you get me?
Now, a fugitive unlocks the key to his past.
From the colony of the Changeling.
Tell me where it is.
I have to show you.
To learn the truth.
I want you to escort the prisoner.
Odo will risk his life.
I don't give up my prisoners.
Then you can die with him.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
This week we're here doing Vortex, which is episode 12 of season 1 of Deep Space Nine. It originally aired on April 18th, 1993. The episode introduces a new race of humanoids from the Gamma Quadrant, known as the Myridorn, during a business transact between unscrupulous bar owner Quark and a pair of Myridorn twins, a Myridorn visitor attempts to steal a valuable item. Odo intercedes, but not before one of the twins is killed. The assailant, identified as Croden, is taken into Odo's custody, while the remaining twin, Akel, vows vengeance. Croden makes several comments to Odo regarding changelings. This piques Odo's interest, as he has never encountered another shapeshifter, and all that is known is that he was found near the wormhole. Croden claims to have met one before. Croden's motives are suspect, as he never divulges anything outright, but he claims that there was once shapeshifters on his homeworld. According to Croden, they were persecuted and driven off the planet. However, he may know of a place where they still exist. Odo is dubious of Croden's stories until Croden gives him a necklace.
Mr. Crodo! Oh, sorry.
Oh, God. Crodo gives him a necklace with a stone that changes shape. Bashir examines it in one of his less annoying moments in the series so far, and curiously, and tells Odo that, given its composition, it could be thought of as his cousin. Commander Sisko and Lieutenant Dax, meanwhile, try to contact Croden's homeworld. Apparently, highly xenophobic, one of their leaders demands Croden's return, to which Sisko acquiesces. Back on the station, Croden tries to tempt Odo, telling him that though he could in person direct Odo to the colony of changelings, he claims to have found. Sisko assigns Odo to return Croden to the latter's homeworld via runabout shuttle. Complicating matters, the surviving Mirrodorn twin, Akel, has remained docked at Deep Space Nine, meticulously checking each ship that leaves to ensure he doesn't lose his opportunity to exact vengeance on Croden. Masked by a departing freighter, Odo manages to ferry Croden to the Gamma Quadrant undetected. Though back on Deep Space Nine, Akel quickly intimidates Quark into revealing that Odo has absconded with Croden, and Akel enters pursuit. In the runabout shuttle with Croden, Odo navigates the vortex, an asteroid field that Croden informs him is filled with unstable pockets known as Tomer. Odo is forced to release Croden to assist in evading Akel's ship. Croden is forced to land on the planet he had claimed contained the changeling colony. On the surface, Croden seems overeager, which reignites Odo's doubt. Odo demands the truth of Croden's stories. Croden reveals that though he had heard stories, he had never actually met a changeling. The shape-shifting stone he had shown Odo was bought at a marketplace. Croden uses the stone to open a chamber he had left on the planet's surface, containing his daughter, whom he had put into stasis. Their life signs having been detected, Akel has fired on the surface, prompting the three to return to the ship. A falling rock incapacitates Odo, and Croden carries him back to the ship. In the vortex, Odo tricks Akel into firing on a pocket of Tomer, destroying the pursuing ship. Ultimately, Croden decides to answer for his crime on his homeworld and asks Odo to care for his daughter. But Odo, indebted to Croden, finds a Vulcan ship that agrees to take Croden and his daughter back to Vulcan with it. Croden gives Odo his necklace containing the changeling stone as a sign of thanks for saving him and his daughter. Now, as I started to watch this episode, it started off with a little byplay between Odo and Odin. Odin was not in this.
That would be an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Anthony Hopkins made a guest appearance. It started with a little byplay between Odo and Quark about the whole traitor thing. And I really thought they were going into another Quark episode. And I thought, really, they're going to just go into that well again? I mean, the last episode was great. I have no problem with that at all. But you know, maybe you're just going a little too far with the Quark stuff. But as it turns out, it really wasn't a Quark-focused episode at all. And I thought that was a good thing. It was time to explore some of the other characters you have. And this was a pretty good jump into Odo, I thought.
Yeah, I don't think you've got anything to worry about that score for the rest of the season. I don't think any episode for the rest of season one is Quark-heavy. I think Quark takes a bit of a backseat now. Yeah, this was a lovely exploration of Odo. And I do like that even though they've all admitted they had it, none of it planned, Deep Space Nine was made up on the hoof, that this does tie into his backstory when we do eventually find out the history of the changelings later on, coming from the Gamma Quadrant. Even though they could have written this all off as Croden lying, which he did a lot, they do manage to tie it all together reasonably well. So it was a good episode. It's not an exceptional episode. It's not great. It's not one I feel the need to rewatch regularly, if at all. But it's not awful, and it's not bad. And while you're watching it, it's enjoyable.
It's not Move Along Home.
It's not. Alan Moraine!
Yeah, thankfully, it's not as bad as Move Along. Yeah, I agree. I like this episode. After coming off from what was an exceptional episode last time out, we get a good examination of another one of the major characters in the show. You know, we get development of Odo's character, we get more of his sense of justice over the rule of law, his desire to do what's right rather than what's lawful, and we get an expansion of the idea of, you know, what the changeling characters are going to be like. Yes, you could probably assume that this isn't what they had planned out for what the changelings were going to be like later in the series. But for a first season episode to see this kind of world building with the character of Odo, it was really nice to see. So yeah, not an exceptional episode, but significantly better than a lot of the stuff that we've seen come before. So I didn't have any problem with it.
Yeah, it was. I like you guys. It wasn't as good as the last one, but it was adequate. There was it had its high points. One of which I don't really think I don't know. I couldn't get into Croden. I know what they were going for. I don't know if it was the actor or his makeup just looked a little off, but. I don't know. I just didn't buy him sometimes. And maybe that's because that's the way they were trying to go with his character. I don't know. It seemed like he was too smug. I don't know if it's because he was playing a con man or he could come came across as a con man. Some of the things just didn't make sense in the with the story. Like, if he was such a good guy, why did he agree to this whole thing with Quark? Now, granted, he's on the run, but why did he actually end up killing that guy in the robbery gone bad? That's what I couldn't really come to terms with his character.
Didn't the egg thing that he had, or no? Well, I was thinking the egg thing that he had would have bought him a small transport that he could have used to get to the vortex, to get to the vortex where he can find his daughter, and that's what he needed the egg.
Okay,
to
but
sell.
If he was such a good character, why was the phaser he was using set to kill? Why couldn't he have just stunned that guy? Why? That's what I'm saying. Why did that guy, that the other Mirrodin, end up dying?
I kind of agree with you on that, Bill. I thought, you know, if he's such a con man, he wouldn't have been as blatant as going in there guns a-blazing. He would have been trying to find a way to more subtly steal money, where he could steal money and people don't even realize they've been robbed until he's gone.
Yeah, his character in the beginning didn't jive with his character at the end for me.
Maybe he was desperate. I mean, you know, I'm trying to come up with explanations that really don't need to be there. I mean, you know, he was essentially just trying to, you know, it wasn't full development of the character. And I can agree with you that if he was supposed to be a con man, why the story at the end that, you know, I was just a simple family person who was trying to defend my family from this oppressive sort of totalitarian government.
Yeah, because I guess you'd assume that he spoke out against the government, and that's why they came. I mean, that wasn't – maybe it was because I was a little tired when I was watching the episode, but that wasn't really explained. I didn't really – I guess that's why, because the government was oppressive and they came and killed him because he spoke out, I guess.
I think they're trying to go for the – you think the character's a bad guy, but here we're going to give you the epiphany to find out he really is noble. And they tried a little too hard to make the change stark.
I'm gonna have to agree with Bill. Really, I don't mind Clifton Young as an actor. I don't care what Sean says; he's great in Shock Treatment.
I did like him. You know, I don't know if any of you guys actually saw the TV series of RoboCop. He played a sort of quirky mad scientist on that show, and I enjoyed him in that. So,
but Bill's right. His makeup looks like it stops halfway up his forehead, doesn't it?
Yeah, like they didn't finish it.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's been completed. Yeah, and all the way through, you're thinking, that just looks stupid.
And then they just give him goofy hair as well. I mean, he doesn't...
They give him 60s rock star hair.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I have a note in my notes. I have the makeup is annoying and uninspired.
Especially seeing as Arkell's makeup was brilliant.
Who?
Arkell's makeup was really good.
I thought his makeup was really good, but it still bothered me a little bit that they still have to give him like a nose ridge. Why does everybody have to have a nose ridge?
It's Star Trek.
And he's another actor.
I'm sorry, I also thought that Odo's makeup looked kind of poor on this, because there's a couple of shots where you could see him from the side and you can see where the makeup on his cheek ends and it goes to like the natural skin on his neck. Mm-hmm. And it should be done where you can't actually see that distinction.
Yeah, it's pretty distinct near the end of the episode where he's talking to the Vulcans and you can see him turning to face the monitor or whatever and talk to the Vulcan commander, that there's a definite distinction between the makeup on his face and the makeup or the lack of makeup on his neck. So yeah, that was kind of, you know, maybe they were just kind of rushed with this episode.
I agree though that I did like Arkell's makeup and his twins' makeup as well, in general. But again, like I said, even then, I it was like, well, why do you got to give him a nose ridge? Why does everybody have to have a nose ridge? It just annoyed me a little bit.
Well, the actor that plays Akel, I mean, is there something with those with the makeup that they use that doesn't let people blink? I'm like, blink, damn it. Blink, for God's sakes, you're killing me. Him and the guy that played that'll play Gowron later on, that guy never blinks.
Well, that's because he's got the big buggy eyes. Almost got Marty Feldman eyes.
I know those eyes were. I was watching him go, you know, I've seen this guy before. So I looked him up. He plays in Enterprise. He plays one of the Zindi. I think it's the one that Archer ends up.
The one with the bug eyes.
Yeah, the bug eyed Zindi. No, I think he plays like the lead scientist that they end up going after to try to turn to their side. But this isn't the Enterprise show. So, but anyway,
not yet.
No, after this, it's Firefly, and we're done. We've got 6.5 more years of this.
But so. What about Buffy? An Angel.
Yeah, that Angel. I did like that Akel and Rokel, the special effects when those two keep walking across each other at the beginning is really well done.
Yeah, at first I thought, did they really get a set of twins?
But yeah, I thought that.
Real close, you could see when he cuts across them, you could see a little bit of an effect there. Oh, okay, so they're not twins. So, but yeah, that was pretty cool.
Really? I'm going to have to go and rewatch that because I didn't even notice that. But it could be because, you know, I was watching it late at night and I was watching it on my tablet, so I didn't really notice that. But yeah, I did not realize that they weren't twins. That's impressive. Nice.
Did anybody think that Akel's, for as big and scary and mean and nasty a Mirrodin supposed to be, what was up with that outfit? Like, when he walked away, it looks like he's dropped a load in the back of his pants.
It didn't look like it fastened around his belly either, to be honest.
It didn't impress me. It didn't scare me. Like, get out of here with that frumpy costume. I'm not afraid.
Yeah, and it's not that Randy Oglesby's fat or anything. Because he isn't. Looks like he's quite a tall, big fella. It just looks like the costume design was particularly unflattering.
It's like somebody just got a pair of coveralls and spray painted some color on.
Yeah, it looks like they were running out of money at this point of the season, doesn't it?
Yeah,
if there was the makeup effects, I don't know.
If there was anyone here who on the show that wasn't all that fit, it was probably Cliff DeYoung. He did, you know, all the rest of the cast members seemed to be pretty fit. Cliff DeYoung sort of came in almost, you know, Brando like and not really being all that physically fit. So I thought everyone else looked fine.
Is it time to get into a Cliff DeYoung story or discussion?
Do you want to? I'll go ahead and mute.
Because we started to talk to him talk about him a little bit in the last episode, and I didn't credit my synopsis to Wikipedia, which I should have. So I went to Cliff DeYoung's Wikipedia page, and it says, let's just see, born 1945, is an American actor and musician. Prior to his acting career, he was the lead singer of the 1960s rock group Clear Light. And if you haven't heard of Clear Light before, join the club.
You're not alone yet.
which played with the more famous artists like The Doors, Jimi Hendrix, and Janis Joplin. So they're famous that they were there when other famous people were around.
They were the opening act that people threw beer bottles at. Get off the stage!
Yeah, really.
They were the opening act for the opening act.
After the band broke up, he starred in the Broadway production of Hair and the Tony Award-winning Sticks and Bones, which, if you have never heard of Sticks and Bones, you're not alone. After 4 years in New York, he moved back to California to star in the television film Sunshine, which about a young mother dying of cancer and featuring the songs of John Denver. There was also
Mountain High.
A laugh riot. That.
Yeah, really.
You're not selling.
There was also a short-lived television series based on the film, the song My Sweet Lady from the film reached number 17 on the Billboard Hot 100 pop chart in 1974. And if you haven't heard of My Sweet Lady, you are not alone.
He was in an episode of X-Files. Does that count?
a sequel, Sunshine and Christmas, was produced in 1977. Wow.
Was that as good as the original?
Still.
If you haven't
no
seen that,
Danny,
you're not alone.
I vaguely remember having seen Sunshine.
Sunshine.
I've seen Sunshine, but it was directed by Danny Boyle and had Chris Evans in it, and it was all about a spaceship man mission to the sun.
No, I vaguely remember actually having seen this particular TV movie. But my memories are so vague, I couldn't give you any actual details about it. But I do recall the show about a woman with cancer and it being based on the John Denver song Sunshine.
Wasn't that basically every ABC movie of the week? You know, someone's dying of some disease and, you know,
well,
people
is,
have to get
that is where we got Brian's song, which I think is the good version of that storyline.
So keep going with Cliff DeYoung facts. This is fascinating.
Okay, here we go. Since then, DeYoung has appeared in more than 80 films and television series, including Harry and Tonto, The 3,000 Mile Chase, Centennial, Blue Collar, as an FBI agent, Shock Treatment, the 1981 sequel to the Rocky
Treatment.
Horror Picture Show.
Which
I've
like a real live wire.
He played two twin characters in that and sang a duet with himself.
He did, yeah. He played Brad Majors and... Oh, I can't remember his other character's name.
He played Brad Majors?
Oh. Yep,
he was Brad Majors, yeah.
He made a guest appearance on Murder, She Wrote.
Didn't everybody?
Yeah,
he was in the Civil War film Glory, where he played the controversial Union Colonel James Montgomery. He was in Suicide Kings and The Last Flight Out. He has guest starred on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yay, you finally get to mention.
And he was reporter Chuck DePalma in 4 episodes of JAG, and Amber Ashby's kidnapper, John Bonacek, on The Young and the Restless in 2007.
Can't believe they don't mention he was in X-Files.
Which one?
No,
was
no
he
X-Files
in?
On here. Wikipedia once again has let us down.
Or RoboCop the series?
Nope, no mention
horrible.
On here.
But it mentions Murder, She Wrote, which he was in 3 times.
I think you're contractually obligated if you're talking about a star to mention the fact that they starred in Murder, She Wrote, because I think you can connect everyone to Murder, She Wrote.
So. Yeah. Sad. Everybody has been killed by Jessica Lansbury, yeah. Of course, if he was in Murder, She Wrote, then that links him to Magnum P.I.
There you go.
So he's good.
So as far as I'm concerned, Cliff DeYoung can do no wrong.
I'm still just disappointed that he has no relationship to Dennis DeYoung of Styx, so that just disappoints me.
Yeah.
Do we not have anything else to say about Vortex?
Oh, no, I have more notes on this one.
Okay.
All right, I thought you were going to say I have more notes on Cliff DeYoung.
No more notes on Cliff DeYoung. I'm done with him.
So, Vortex. We had the old turn myself into the fifth glass trick in the opening. Where Odo...
Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of notes about that. Where does the rest of Odo go when he becomes a glass?
Yeah, does he shunt off his excess body weight into the Pym universe? The Pym pocket universe? You know, like, where? Yeah. And when the glass breaks, wouldn't he, like, lose... I mean, well, yeah, I guess he is made out of liquid.
Yeah,
maybe
but
he
just liquid mercuries himself together.
Yeah, but
for all we know, Odo's hollow. He could be, conceivably. But if that's the case at the end, why does Cliff DeYoung say you're heavier than you look?
Right, there's...
That's true. Good point.
And if he's... And I was surprised... If he's liquid, why wouldn't... I don't know. I guess if he makes himself solid, he becomes... susceptible to solid rules, because shouldn't the rock have just passed through him, or couldn't have just bounced off of him?
Well, I think he needs to be aware enough to do it.
How can Plastic Man, form himself into the shape of a boss or elongated man? They can do that. I remember in some issue of Justice League International, Ralph Dibny saying that he spent time as an as a Vaz to try and infiltrate this person. He stayed as a Vaz for like 3 weeks or something. So
I want to see Odo twitch his nose like the elongated man.
Oh, that'd be cool.
He is a detective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that's true.
That's our tentative link between the Justice League and Deep Space Nine.
I think they got some. They probably got some ways to diminish the special effects budget on this episode by just reusing the Motara Nebula effects.
Star Trek:
The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, and how many times I've seen that in Next Gen?
Yeah, but it was in Best of Both Worlds, wasn't it?
Yeah, do all nebulas suddenly look the same?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every nebula is exactly the same. You know that
because as soon as I saw that, I just hear Spock, the Motara Nebula.
So you'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Or gas.
Yeah, it's good that they had methane pockets in here that would big fart gas bubbles.
Big giant space whales came by from Doctor Who, and that's where they left all their gas.
Oh, well, there's some more crossing the streams. Wow.
Crossing the gas, perhaps.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Paul? Drag us out of this, please, Paul.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm going to go to my notes a little bit. I thought that I really...
Wait. You're not on the Cliff DeYoung notes anymore, are you?
No, I am off of Cliff DeYoung. All
right.
I thought it was really
cool. I'm sure
cool
he's happy.
I thought it was really cool. Just the whole aspect of actually going into the wormhole and going to the other side of it. Which I'm not sure we've seen the other side of the wormhole at this point. We've seen when they went in, in Emissary, when he went in and kind of conversed with the prophets, but I don't think we saw the other side of it yet.
Yeah, the other side, but it was never really anything major. It was just, you know, another star field. It wasn't like we saw, oh, here's a new planet or anything. I think they actually passed through because they had to rescue. Didn't the Cardassian ship, you know, go all the way through or something? Maybe.
Yeah, well, I know the ships have gone through, but I don't think we've gone through.
Mm. Mm.
And I mean, I did get filled with a little bit of, you know, just kind of that sense of, like, curiosity and awe. Like, what are we going to see here? You know, and that's even having seen the series before. So I thought it was well directed in that way and well written to kind of build up the suspense a little bit of that whole aspect of it. Although, on the one hand, I'll say well written, and on the other hand, I'll say I thought some of the dialogue in the show was a little clunky and unnatural. I thought that Croden, you know, they want you to believe that he's this con man, but I didn't think his dialogue was quite as slick as I would have wanted.
No, it kind of fell a little flat.
Although, again, but we don't know if that's the actor's delivery, do we?
Yeah, no, it could be that. I do give credit to the episode for having an appearance by Bashir in which he is not annoying.
I think that may really be in it.
Season.
Did we have a Norm sighting? Morn sighting?
Oh, we had big Morn sighting, and in my opinion, the best line in the whole episode, because Morn should keep his big mouth shut.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. He's like, what?
Yeah, he's sitting there. You know, I don't know if Morn is like purely an animatronic or if there's somebody behind the makeup, but I thought he did a good acting job there. Now, when they landed on the planet, or the whatever it was that they landed in the vortex, shouldn't Odo have kind of restrained Croden in some way instead of just letting him run off? Maybe put the handcuffs back on him or something? Would you give the guy free rein like that?
Well, maybe he's not thinking, because he's thinking this guy's leading him to his people. He's might have got wrapped up in the moment. I mean, they are fleeing. The guy had kind of proved himself in that he had helped him get away from the Myrmidons. So, I mean, I'll kind of give him that. Although, I guess random asteroids in a nebula have an atmosphere!
Well, we don't know that Odo needs an atmosphere.
Well, the other people might.
We don't know that Croden needs an atmosphere.
Well, then why do you... Well, I mean, he put his daughter in a stasis pod tube thingy. That I noticed when Odo leaned on it, kind of gave way. I'm like, that's a pretty flimsy stasis pod.
Well, he's from a, you know, he's a rural farmer type person on a, you know, cheap planet. He can't afford the high ends. He can't afford the Cadillac of these stasis pods. So there you go.
Well, yeah, and that big I guess that's why the big styrofoam rock didn't crush it.
Yeah, that looked a little phony when they rolled the rock a bit. It moved a little too easy at some points.
But it was had all those heavy scraping sounds.
Yeah, that's as long as you have good Foley artists, you're okay.
Yeah.
To the Foley artists. Bravo, bravo, sirs.
I did like the Quark moments in the episode where when he was threatened, he basically gave up Odo pretty quickly. I thought that was kind of true to his character, but you also see some regret in him, that, you know, like just the way he played it. You know, he wasn't happy to have done it. And you wonder, is that regret because he has a fondness for Odo now, or is that regret because he didn't get any profit out of it?
I put it more to him having a sort of fondness. Like we said, he's sort of that, they've got that Casablanca type feel of, you know, the two characters from that. I can't remember his name, but Rick and the captain from Casablanca. So yeah, I did like the fact that, you know, Rom saying, oh, this is going to be wonderful. You know, Odo's going to get himself killed and we'll be rid of him. And Quark is kind of remorseful about that.
But he's also remorseful because if Odo survives, he might give him up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he's not only looking out for a person that he has at least some sort of feelings for. He's got a personal, you know, he's got a personal debt in that as well. So yeah, I can see both aspects of it playing out.
Now that little pendant shapeshifter thingy that Bashir says is a cousin of Odo. Does that come up later in the series? Is that a call? Does that get referenced back to? I don't remember.
I don't have any memory of ever seeing it again.
No, you'd think he would wear it for the rest of the run, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then he couldn't because what does he really go back and tell Sisko? Does he tell him what really? Does he just lie? And then he can't wear that pendant because they'd be like, hey, where'd you get that pendant from?
Well, he can't wear it anyway because when he morphs, it'd fall off. But so would his comm badge, and we just ignore that.
Which brings to mind the question, the clothes that Odo's wearing, are they part of him and is he really naked?
Ew.
Yeah, that's just as valid a question as where does the comm badge go from? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the comm badge falls into the bucket and he, you know, remorphs around it.
Where was it when he was the glass?
We should have seen it like stuck in the side of the glass.
That would have given it away. What would have
thought? What the heck is this? Just imagine somebody was drinking out of Odo. Ew.
Well, it's like when you mentioned Plastic Man earlier, and every once in a while you'd see like he turned into a glass, but you still see like the glasses.
Yeah, you'd see his face on the side of it.
Now, when Odo got knocked out by the rock,
Rock.
I'm going to throw a rock at him.
I was going to say, by Gila Croc?
No, by, what's his name? Smell what the rock is cooking.
Dwayne Johnson?
That's him.
Yeah. Black Adam?
But again, he's in Voyager, so we're mixing up our shows.
That's true.
Hakuna Matata! Wait, no, that's what I thought he always says in The Scorpion King. Hakuna Matata! Oh, when he comes rising.
So, like I said, when Odo got knocked out by the rock...
I wish I had a rock.
I noticed that the... Like, you know, the blasters were shooting. He gets knocked out, and they just stopped in order to allow them to have some dialogue between Croden and his daughter. And then they started up again.
They had to recharge.
It just, yeah, okay, that's why.
Exposition?
Truncate silence.
It's the exposition. Wanna show.
The other negative I had is the whole thing at the end with the Vulcans. It just seemed a little too convenient that he could send them off with the Vulcans and no one would bother investigating.
No questions asked. So these people are going to start a brand new life. No money, no nothing, no identity on Vulcan. Good luck with that.
But even that they'd be able to start a new life there, that the Vulcans transporting them and when they land on Vulcan, no one's going to investigate to see who they are. It's just going to be accepted. Odo says, "Oh, he died in the attack, and that's it. No one's going to be curious about this strange person that's showing up on Vulcan."
Like they wouldn't have. Well, because you figure they would have scanned him, but I guess Odo's going to go back and delete all the records of Croden out of the station's computers, because wouldn't that information be there? And they could reference that when, you know, the first time they scan him when they get to Vulcan. So you have a crappy con man that's going to be going to a planet full of people that could see right through a lot of bullshit. So good luck.
I can't argue with that. I was going to come up with something, you know, there's supposed to be, his planet is supposed to be 70,000 light years away through a wormhole. It's difficult. Well, not difficult to get there since there's a wormhole, but, you know, Odo's capable of, you know, misdirecting them. But yeah, now that you've mentioned all that, my argument is thrown out the window. So, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Then now I've exhausted my notes, including my Cliff DeYoung notes.
Oh, let's go back and, you know, talk a little bit more about Cliff DeYoung. I can't get enough of him.
Come sail away, come sail away.
No, it's Dennis.
Oh, sorry, I have my DeYoungs mixed up.
Yeah. So, do we want to give this
forever DeYoung? Ooh, bro, bring the room to a truncated silent stop.
Truncate
that joke.
Okay, do we have ratings for this one?
I'm going, since I don't count.
You count. I added a column for Bill's rating.
Well, no, you should just have to guess.
Since I don't count, I'm giving it a 10.
That's right. I screw it all up.
You always count to me.
I was just say you always screw everything up. Thank you, Andy. I'm going to give it a 3.75. Cut that bar of latinum. I like the Odo world building a little bit, even though that may not have been intended at this time, or just comes out to be a happy coincidence later. Some of the plot holes we discussed a little bit with, you know, of why, if he's such a noble character at the end, was he a douchebag in the beginning? And that's, you know, it was an okay episode. Like you guys say, I probably, if I saw it on and I was flipping through, like the last show that I was on, if I saw that one on, I'd probably leave it on and watch it while I'm doing something else, or just sit down and watch it. This one I would probably just keep going.
Move along home.
A la Moraine.
Okay, I'll go ahead and go next. Oh, did you have something else?
No, I would say, but it wasn't as bad as apparently A la Moraine. Move along home, but you know, it was yeah.
You know, Andy gave that one a 1.5.
Oh, look, a bus just went past. Oh, there's me under it.
Okay, I'll go ahead and give my rating next. I enjoyed this one. You know, of course, it doesn't hold up to the previous episode. I think that was probably one of the better ones we'll see this season. But it was good. I like the character of Odo. I like getting a little plot development with him. I like the idea of his morality and us exploring that a little bit more. Cliff DeYoung was an interesting character. Yes, there were some flaws in his, you know, in the logic of why he was doing things, but overall, I'd probably give us, I'd give us 3.5 bars.
Two. And a half. No, two. I'm going low. I'm going with two. It's like sometimes we will change our rating depending on what we've discussed in the show, and sometimes we've elevated a show and sometimes we've lowered a show depending on the points made. And this one's just meh. It's not bad. It's not Move Along Home, which I didn't think was atrociously, I thought it was campy fun, stupid but campy fun. This was meh. I don't think Cliff DeYoung carries the show. And an episode like this needs a guest actor that can go toe-to-toe with René or Bourgeois.
Somebody at the level of Bash.
Yeah, somebody at exactly the level of Jennifer Hetrick, yeah. And when you've got Armin Shimerman on the show, who is capable of going toe-to-toe with René or Bourgeois, anyone who doesn't bring themselves to that level fails automatically. And DeYoung's in a lot of this episode, and he's just not very engaging. It's not a bad performance, it's just a very flat performance. And the only other question I really have is, why do all the Vulcan women in Next Gen era Star Trek have Spock her? If memory serves, T'Pring had lovely her, and lovely everything else as well.
They're in the science corps?
Okay, so if you're a scientist, you've got to have a bowl cut. Is that what you're
saying? It's a military cut? I don't know.
Okay, all right. I'm going with two.
You got a question to Pring's taste in men, having gone for Shan and all, though.
Yeah, you've also got a question to Pring's taste in logic, because it was a fight to the death, and that doesn't seem to have come to her when she was working out that Ston would still be there at the end.
Still, I will have Shan.
Yes, but still I would prefer to Pring, but that's just me.
All right, well, I'm going to fall like right in the middle of all of you, because I liked the episode. I liked the fact that it made me think a lot more about Odo and what his history was. And to some extent, the mystery of Odo has been kind of touched upon but left on the back burner. And this brings it up to the forefront a little bit, and I liked that. On the negative end, we had the problems with the makeup, the dialogue, the character of Croden, and just some of the convenient plot devices that they used. So I'm going to say above average because of the curiosity it brought out in me and the very, very minor satisfaction that I got from some of the answers, but that it made that curiosity come to the forefront. So I'm going to say just slightly above average, and I'm going to give it a 3.
Can I revise my number?
Yeah, you can delete the spreadsheet. That's no problem.
Okay, what do you want to change it to, Bill?
I don't know. I guess I was a little too generous then after listening to you guys.
No, but you got to give your opinion, not ours.
Oh, I don't know. All right, I'll stick with the 3.75.
You know what I've been trying to do?
You can't get 0.75 a piece of latinum? That's crazy talk.
Well, you break it into four
pieces.
Oh,
you get a half.
Three of them.
Yeah. You take the half that you broke. And you break it in half, and you put
we
that
really
back.
Do need the economist that is Professor Allen on the show to explain to me how latinum works.
You know what I've been doing though, as far as my ratings go, just to let you know, this is my method of doing it. Is once I watch the show, I come up with what I'm going to give it, and I mark it on my spreadsheet, and then I hear what you have to say. And maybe if you did influence me, then I would say I'm changing my rating based on what you've told me. But I try not to wait until I hear what you've said before assigning it. I want to assign it before we even started.
I'm surprised that you're all advanced and prepared enough to have spreadsheets.
I had a really nice spreadsheet until I had to add bills, and now I have to readjust all the columns and everything.
I have a notebook page with 3 columns for our names and another column to put the episode title, and I just added a 4th column for Bill.
It's more than I've got, dude.
But you know what? Well, my thought is I also want to keep an idea of where I rated other ones, because I don't want to do this in a total vacuum. I want to be able to say, this one's better than that one or whatever.
I'm staying away from the 5 gold press latinum bars because I know what episode of the first season is getting that rating.
Well, no, there has not been a 5 by any of us yet.
No, not yet.
Well, there will be, my friend.
Well, okay, I'm waiting for that.
Looking forward to that.
I'm not sure which one it is because I'm not sure. I honestly don't have a memory as to exactly what's coming up for the rest of the season, and I'm just experiencing it as we go along.
Okay.
Because it's been so long since I've watched some of these.
All right, well, do we want to go ahead and go into some email this time out?
Incoming transmission.
We have one more piece of email. You want me to do it?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it's from Mr. Dave Walker.
Hey, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Dave writes, "Hey guys," he knew that Bill was going to be on, so he included him there. "Just wanted to weigh in on the O'Brien defying Sisko thing from episode 5. Yes, Sean was right about that.
All right, I like you, Dave.
While Paul has a valid opinion on letting Smiley get away with this without Sisko's taciturn permission, I have to decide with Andy on this.
Yay, Dave's the man."
So Dave's basically playing us all.
"As it does not factor in the bigger picture. While going against Sisko's orders undermines his authority, Sisko going against Starfleet orders undermines their authority. While we know Sisko is an important character for the story from the O'Brien's point of view, it may have been more important to sustain Starfleet's authority over the station, since if Sisko's authority is called into question, he can be replaced. If somehow people found out that Sisko defied Starfleet's orders this early into establishing their presence in the sector, it could jeopardize their relations with Bajor, and therefore any missions into the Gamma Quadrant that would have taken place. It also would have
made the show a lot shorter. That's all my thoughts on it. Hopefully I've been concise and clear in my ramblings. Keep up the good job you're doing on the show, and I'm looking forward to getting to listen to the Q-less episode that is currently awaiting me. Dave Walker, for those of you all that may not know. Dave, I think you've explained my argument in saying Sisko's taciturn permission. I didn't think Sisko should just come out and openly defy Starfleet, but I thought O'Brien, being his subordinate, should have followed up with whatever Sisko told him to do. I think right now Sisko's putting himself in a position, we know better because we know where the series goes, but without knowing that, I think Sisko's putting himself in a position where he's saying to people like Kira and O'Brien, you know what, you do what you think is right and don't worry about what I said. And I don't think you can run a station that way. So I think you really needed Sisko to kind of give a wink and a nod to O'Brien before O'Brien did what he did. Because what happens when O'Brien decides that Sisko's wrong about something that Sisko really does feel strongly about?
Mm-hmm. And he goes against him, and, you know, Sisko isn't approving of what he's done.
So. Or if Sisko's put a whole, you know, series of plans into effect because he expects something to happen, and he gives O'Brien an order, and O'Brien defies it, and now that just sets a whole house of cards falling. You can't do that when you're in charge. I mean, you just can't allow for such things, I don't think. Mm. Bill, you were in the military. What do you think about all of this?
Sorry, what? No. No, yeah, well, you're probably not asking the best person who about military, if we had time for real life with Dr. Bill, but this isn't that show.
Yeah, this is a different show.
Let's just say I often had 4.0 evals, but eventually I would say something to the wrong person or mouth off, and those would get a little lower and a little lower. But I was a good sailor, but I couldn't keep my mouth shut. So I'm not the one to ask about. You should not ask me about military discipline, because it's sometimes I did not have the correct military discipline. So I would probably be, you know, like, never mind. I'll be
quiet. So you're saying you and the brig were good friends?
No, I never went that far. I did almost go to captain's mast once, but yes. It wasn't my fault. It's not my fault! I had nowhere else to go.
I got nowhere else to go! I got nothing else.
Oh, Lord, am I going to have to get that sound bite?
By the time this comes out, An Officer and Gentleman is disappearing from Netflix, so if anybody wants to see it, hurry!
I'll get right on that.
As much as I love putting that clip on, I'd tell everybody don't rush.
Yeah.
You're not
let
missing
it go.
Anything.
Just Trust let me. It go.
No, we're not putting that clip in.
Okay, I'm going to have to go, fellas. My mum and dad are here.
Okay, do you want to give us a quick...
Did you wrap up?
Yep, we're wrapping up. Give
you
us
want to just
quick...
do it next time before you go?
Yeah, I do not want to do a bye bit, and then we'll do what's... Yes. All right. Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophet, Mike from Breaking Bad shows up. That'll be interesting.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Group called Clear Light.
Clear.
So obviously they were really big,
and their vast array of, you know, gold and platinum selling albums.
Dude, is it Clear
gold
and Clear Light?
Platinum.
Turn it up.
My God. Gold platinum.
Oh, what happened then?
Did somebody get phasered?
No, everyone's still here.
Oh, okay.
Paul?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I heard
yes,
like
my
a,
friend.
We saw it. Space methane.